Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We like hanging out with you, and we appreciate all the wonderful things that you're doing for the support of our communities. Joining us today from Kentucky, the AFL-CIO Area Council and the Kentucky Labor Institute, we've got Barry Craig. Barry, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Barry, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Bill Lonergan is a little bit under the weather. You're pinch hitting for him today. We appreciate that. You know, Barry, it all across the United States, we are seeing that the Democrats are voting. They're voting early. They're coming out. They're engaged. They're doing what they have to do. What's going on in Kentucky? Same thing, I'm sure.
I think so. Of course, Charles, we don't have an early voting program like other states. You can vote early if you're going to be out of town or if you're going to have an operation, something like that. But we don't have early voting. And do you have it in Pennsylvania? Do you all have early voting there in Pennsylvania? So, in other words, you can go vote for no just any reason. You just show up and vote, right?
Well, you can vote by a paper ballot or you can mail-in ballot.
Right. Yeah. Right. But here in Kentucky, we don't have that mechanism. You have to have a reason to do it. It's pretty easy to do it. But by and large, the great majority of our ballots will be cast on November the 8th. That's the way it is in this state. But I agree with you. I think that this so-called enthusiasm gap that the Republicans are making a big deal about, I don't think it's as wide as they would like to have us believe. And I think, too, that I'm an old reporter, too, and I like to watch and see what these young reporters do. And I keep hearing these reporters talk about these WikiLeaks and asking these Democratic operatives, do you think that's going to drive a wedge in Hillary Clinton and her progressive base? It's a fair question, but I just don't see that. I really don't. And if it were true, I think you would see Bernie Sanders staying at home. He's on the campaign trail. I think you would see Elizabeth Warren at home. She's on the campaign trail. There's no question. Now, what I hope happens is after she's elected that the progressive wing of the party, our wing of the party, will keep her feet to the fire. But again, look at that platform. That's one of the most progressive platforms the Democratic Party's ever had. So I think bottom line is there is enthusiasm here. My wife and I were out walking the other day, beautiful autumn day here in Kentucky, and son of a gun, we came across our local House candidate, Jesse Wright, who was out going door to door. These candidates are working very hard. Shoe leather is being worn out, and a lot of handbills are being passed out. A lot of phone banks are going on. So you don't see this enthusiasm gap on the part of organized labor in Kentucky. We're getting out the vote. We're doing all we can. And, boy, time is running out. 15 days from today.
It's incredible, Barry. I mean, you know, I remember this is like the third time that we have gone through the 2-year countdown. And it's just the kind of thing where I hope, as we have continued to do this over literally the last decade, this January would be a decade for us being on the air, that we are getting more and more people engaged in the process. I cannot help but think with some of the fights that the Kentucky Labor Institute and the Kentucky AFL-CIO and everybody else has been engaged in over the last year, that you have awoken some people, some Republicans, some Democrats, some independents. I mean, it doesn't matter what your party affiliation is if you're not being treated fairly on the job. Well, it's time for a union.
I think you're right, Charles. And the old expression, nothing succeeds like success. Well, you go back and organize labor in Kentucky, and the Republicans have been preaching our funeral for years and years and years. But to paraphrase Mark Twain, I believe that the reports of our death are greatly exaggerated. You go back a few months ago, we talked about this, and Bill, and you talked about this, this movement to have these county right-to-work ordinances. 120 counties, a handful of counties did this. I maintained all along was unconstitutional. That labor law very plainly says that only a state or a territory can pass a right-to-work law. Federal court threw that out. They lost that big time. Go back to these special elections in March. And the Republicans were completely confident they were going to run the table or at least win 3 out of 4. We had just lost this governor's race. This right-wing, Tea Party-tilting, union-hating governor came in. And the Republicans thought this is they'll win these 4 elections, bring the House to 50-50, and then probably get some Democrats to retreat to switch parties. After all was said and done, we won 3 out of 4 of those races. And again, the Democrats who won those races and the Democratic Party brass in Kentucky will tell you to this day that unions were absolutely critical in getting that getting those 3 victories in the bag. I go back to the last election cycle, which, of course, would be 2014. And one of my good buddies, Gerald Watkins, is a state representative from Paducah. Gerald and I talked together for many, many years. He was involved in a very tight race with a Republican. Now, 2 years ago, Charles, the Republicans hit the campaign trail hard on Right to Work. Jeff Hoover, who is the House Minority Leader, who wants to be the House Speaker, he traveled the state. He had presentations, had press conferences with Republicans touting Right to Work. Well, believe it or not, at a Labor Day program in Paducah in 2014, this Republican candidate wanted to speak. He got up and he bragged on his father, who was a non-union contractor, and he said Right to Work was the greatest thing going. You can imagine the response of the crowd. It ranged from boos to stunned silence. But I'm going to tell you what that did. That fired up organized labor in western Kentucky. It was like an electric shock. So a few weeks later, Larry Sanderson, who's retired UA international representative in Paducah, well-known labor leader in Kentucky, got together with Kyle Henderson, his stepson, who's also in UA. He's the business manager of the local 184 in Paducah. They got together and put on this tremendous labor rally. Thousands of people showed up, and Gerald won. Gerald will tell you this day that labor support, galvanizing that labor support, really helped him over the top. So labor can look back in the past few months and see we've done really, really well. We have, again, going back to Gerald's race locally, and the rally also helped Will Corsi, a state representative from Marshall County next door to Paducah, get elected. So we've got successes out there. And again, you know, Charles, it's like a ball team. If your team is winning, you're going to pack the house. You're going to pack the stadium. You're going to pack the field house. And I think unions can look back very plainly and see just what can be accomplished if you turn out and get busy and work. Now, having said that, I really believe that unions are aware, painfully aware, as to what this House election means to us. We've done this before, but let's do it again. 53-47 is the Democratic majority. That's a pretty thin majority by any stretch of the imagination. Now, the UA, I'm going to brag on them, they have got a tremendous video out here in Kentucky. And you can see it, by the way, by going to our website, which is ky.aflcio.org. And this is it's a terrific, well done, very professionally done. It's a group of UA folks from across the state explaining why these state elections are so important here in Kentucky. We are the only southern state with a Democratic majority chamber. And that Democratic majority chamber is all that's standing between us and Right to Work, all that's standing between us and repeal prevailing wage, all that's standing between us and a rollback of every gang unions have made since the New Deal. One of the fellows that's is on this tape is a guy named Doug Gayhafer, who is a retired sprinkler fitter, and he makes an outstanding point, and it's absolutely true. And he says that what happens in the presidential races really don't have direct bearing on union folks, rank and file folks. And if you think about it, that's true. Who passes Right to Work laws? State legislatures do. Right. Who repeals prevailing wage? State legislatures. In other words, that's where the action is. And so he says that's why. And he says he's all up in his 60s, about my age, and he has seen presidents come and go. But no one in the White House had any effect on Right to Work in Kentucky or prevailing wage repeal. These legislative elections do. Therefore, he says that union members really, he's not saying you shouldn't vote for president. He's not saying you shouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, who's our endorsed candidate. But what he's saying is the mischief can really be caused in this legislature. And Charles, you think back, Kentucky's a border state. Tell what I would have done. 10 years ago, I would have bet you $100. There was no way on God's green earth that Wisconsin or Michigan could have gone right to work. Wisconsin, that's where AFSCME started. Michigan, that's UAW. And they're right to work. Their Republican majority legislatures made them right to work, and these Republican governors. So I think that is a lesson from the past that behooves all of us. And of course, the presidential election makes the big headlines. That's absolutely true. Always has been. I guess always will be. But I hope as we go through this, as we get close to the election, that folks will remember these down-ballot races, these yes. state legislative races.
And Barry, hold that thought, because sure. when we come back, we're going to talk about that some more.
Okay.
For anybody who thinks that, well, you know, I'm not happy with this one or that one or the other one, I'm just going to stay home. No, there's a lesson to be learned there. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
Improve your life. Join a union. Interested? Just ask us. We will show you how. TheUnionEdge.com.
Just when you thought that surely big banker greed had bottomed out with 2008's Wall Street crash and bailout, along comes Wells Fargo, burrowing even deeper into the ethical slime to reach a previously unimaginable level of corporate depravity. It's one thing for these giants of finance to cook the books or defraud investors, but top executives of Wells Fargo have been profiteering for years by literally forcing their employees to rob the bank's customers. Rather than a culture of service, executives have pushed a high-pressure sales culture, at least since 2009, demanding that frontline employees meet extreme quotas of selling a myriad of unnecessary bank products to common depositors who just wanted a simple checking account. Employees were expected to load each customer with at least 8 accounts, and employees were monitored constantly on meeting their quota. Fail, and you'd be fired. That's why the boss's sales culture turned employees into a syndicate of bank robbers. The thievery was systemic, and it was not subtle. 500,000 customers were secretly issued credit cards they did not request. Fake email accounts for online services were set up without customers' knowledge. Debit cards were issued and activated without telling customers. Depositors' money was moved from one account to another. Signatures were forged. And, of course, Wells Fargo collected fees for all of these bogus transactions, boosting its profits. This is Jim Hightower saying, CEO John Stumpf was recently forced out because of the scandal. But what about the other top executives and the board of directors, all of whom were highly paid partners in this crime? Stumpf was not the only rotten apple at Wells Fargo. This is not a case of a few bankers gone rogue, but of a whole bank gone rogue, rotting from the head down.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures, a stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college, which ends up making the future better for all of us. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Every hiring manager knows that a company is only as good as the people it's made from. So where do you find the best people? That may surprise you.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
This is talent worth knowing about.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Let's get America working. We must build, maintain, and repair our nation's crumbling infrastructure. Teamsters support a bipartisan approach to creating good jobs for American workers. Learn more at letsgetamericaworking.com. Teamsters strong, America stronger.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We like hanging out with you, and we appreciate all the wonderful things you're doing for the community. Joining me today by phone, we've got Barry Craig of the Kentucky Labor Institute in the Western Kentucky, AFL-CIO Area Council. Barry, welcome back.
Good to be back.
Barry, before you left, we were talking about you might not like. You know who's on top of the ticket? There are Democrats out there that do not like Hillary Clinton, and that's fine. Okay. But does that mean that you can just sit on your haunches and stay home? No, absolutely not. You know, there are other people on that ballot. There are initiatives on that ballot that you need to voice your opinion about. Now, if you decide that you don't want to vote for this person or that person, fine. That's on you. And that's between you and your ballot box. But when it's all said and done, you still need to participate.
You're exactly right, Charles. And the political realities being what they are in Kentucky, Donald Trump will carry this state. I hate to say it. It's a shame to say it, but that's a fact. And so what we're trying to stress is just what you said. You may not like Hillary Clinton. You may like Donald Trump. I can't imagine why, but be that as it may. Think about these House races as something entirely separate. And they are. They are. And so that's what we're asking. If you can't bring yourself to vote for Hillary Clinton or our Senate candidate, Jim Gray, at least give some thought to these local races and what can happen. And again, you go back to this legislature. You know, Charles, and I know you know the old parable of the little boy who cried wolf, that this kid in myth was always going around yelling wolf to excite his village, and they would get all excited about the wolf, and then everybody kept doing it. And so finally one day the wolf actually came, and the villagers said, well, you're just saying this stuff again, and the wolf eats the people up. And I know every time we have an election, politicians say this is the most important election in your lifetime. And they say it so often, Republicans and Democrats, that people think, well, that's just what politicians say. But we can't stress enough that the future of organized labor in Kentucky is really riding on these House races. Again, 53-47. It wouldn't take much of a swing to flip the House. Now, if that were to happen, the dam would burst. This flood of anti-union legislation that's been pent up in the Senate for many, many years will come flowing out. The Senate has a 27-11 pro-right-to-work, anti-labor Republican majority. The governor of Kentucky is ferociously anti-labor. So they're not going to sit back. They're not going to wait. Day one of the legislature, when it meets in January, here they'll come. Right-to-work bill, repeal prevailing wage, gut workers' comp, gut state OSHA, right down the line.
Right.
Now, one of the fellows on this video, he addressed a very important point. Now, let's say, perish the thought, the Democrats lose the House in November. Let's say the Democrats win the House back in 2018. Well, guess what? That won't matter because the Republicans will still have the Senate, they'll still have the governorship, and the damage will remain done.
Right. You can't reverse it.
You can't. The state Senate in Kentucky has been Republican for something like 16 years. Now, it would take a tsunami, a wave election, to reverse that. Do the math. 27-11, what kind of a swing would that take? Would it take? It just wouldn't happen in one cycle or two cycles. That Senate is going to be Republican for the foreseeable future. Hate to say it, but that's the reality of it. So don't think, well, okay, if we don't get them this year, if we lose this year, we'll get it back in 2 years. Well, even if we do get it back, we're sunk. Now, again, for people who think that right to work isn't so bad, take a look at the poorest states in this country. They are right-to-work states. Do Kentuckians want this state to become Mississippi or Alabama? I don't think they do. And if you go look at what has happened in Michigan and in Wisconsin, where the governors up there, and their legislatures have laid waste to organized labor. This is what's going to happen in Kentucky. I know it's difficult to convince people that the worst could come. I'd hate to, and I've heard union people, Charles, I bet you have too in Pennsylvania, say, you know, it's almost to the point where we're going to have to get down back down to zero before people can realize the mess we're in, the danger we're facing.
Yeah, but Barry, you know, people may say, oh, well, we got to start all over again. Do we have to go back to the time where people were paid in company script? They lived.
That's exactly right, and you're absolutely right. And it's like you hope to God that we don't have to get that far back before people wise up. Again, I think in Kentucky, the union movement has wised up. I think that people understood. It's a simple matter of math. It has to be simple involving math when I'm involved because I'm not good in math. But it's very easy to see. Had those Republicans flipped those four seats, we're talking a 50-50 split. Now, at that point, whichever party was 50-50, they would start trying to convince people to switch parties, giving all kinds of inducements. And, of course, the governor has been strong-arming Democrats to try to flip. That's another whole story. So I think labor understood what was at stake, and so labor got busy, and the majority is 53-47. And as long as we have a one-seat majority, the gavel will be in the hand of Greg Stumbo, who is strongly pro-union, the chair of the House Labor and Industry Committee, Rick Nelson, a strong pro-labor Democrat. You know, Charles, when these right-to-work bills come out of the Senate, they go straight to labor and industry, and they die. Same with prevailing wage. Now, if they get a 51-49 majority, the chairmanships change. The gavel will go into the hands, I guess, of Jeff Hoover. And there's nothing to stop, nothing to stop. And even had we elected a Democratic governor last November, sorry we didn't, but even if we had, in Kentucky, you can override a governor's veto with a simple majority. What's it like in Pennsylvania? Is it two-thirds in Pennsylvania, or do you know?
Yes, I believe it's two-thirds.
And see, in the federal Congress it is. So we wouldn't, that's not even a backstop. That's not, I mean, of course, that almost makes a veto pointless. I mean, I guess perhaps a governor could maybe change some votes. But that's what we're facing. And I think that unions in Kentucky are aware of the stark nature of this. Our back is against the wall. This is absolutely it. And
now, Barry, one of the other things that needs to be understood very clearly with the rest of the general public is what happens to unions happens to non-union employees to a much greater degree.
Absolutely. Well, let's take, for example, workers' compensation. That's not just union folks. There's a federal OSHA. We have a state OSHA. Well, OSHA inspectors don't go to union places. They go to all places. That's absolutely correct. Unions support the minimum wage, even though union members make more than minimum wage. Bevin's against that. They're against that, too. We won't have a minimum wage. No, you're absolutely right. And I'll tell you something else, too. As you well know, union wages keep wages up at non-union plants. We have a Toyota has a factory in Georgetown, Kentucky. And Toyota pays pretty good wages and benefits. Why? Because they're afraid if they don't, the workers will go with the UAW. So those UAW, those union wages in union plants, like at Ford in Louisville, keep those non-union wages up. That's absolutely true across the board. And I'll tell you something else, too, that I've known people who worked in supervisory roles in various plants, and they will tell you that they were always happy to see the union get a raise in a contract because guess what? They did, too.
Absolutely. Barry, we got to get going. It's always a pleasure.
Same here.
We appreciate it. How do we find out more about the Kentucky AFL-CIO?
Just go to our website. It's right there, kyaflcl.org, or do a Google search. And again, if you live in Kentucky and pack a union card, please, if you've got something on your mind, let us know. Send us an email, bcraig8960@gmail.com. And again, can't pay you. We can give you a byline, though.
There you go. Doesn't get any better than that. Barry Craig, the Kentucky Labor Institute and the Western Kentucky AFL-CIO Area Council. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.